will say, I really do encourage you to have your Bibles out. There are a couple slides that I noticed this morning where the text is quite small. I asked Meredith when she was sitting there if she could read it, and she said that she could, but for maybe old people, they wouldn't be able to, is what she said. So don't raise your hands if that's you, but it's good to have your Bibles out and follow along if the text does get a little small, and I apologize for that. By way of review, to lead into our study for today, we've been studying of how Israel rejected the Lord. And they rejected the Lord as their king. Saul was then chosen to lead Israel. Saul was chosen by the Lord to be the king of Israel. And then Saul, on some occasions, we find acted very bravely. You think about the situation with Gilgal. The Spirit of God came upon him mightily. He acted very bravely. But then also we see Saul acting incredibly foolishly and acting wickedly. Two occasions that definitely stand out is when he was impatient waiting for Samuel and he offered the burnt offering, which he was not authorized to do. And also when he refused to utterly destroy Amalek and then continually made excuses about it to Samuel. When he was to utterly destroy them in chapter 15. And the consequence of those actions, of his wickedness, are plainly stated. You think about 1 Samuel chapter 13, 14. Samuel told him that his kingdom would not endure, that the Lord had sought out for himself a man after his own heart. You also think about in chapter 15, verse 28, Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to your neighbor who is better than you." Who is this person that is better than Saul, who is his neighbor, who is the man after God's own heart? David, right. And so this individual, David, as you've been studying, is a shepherd boy. He was anointed by Samuel to be the next king. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 13 and 14, it tells that the Spirit of God came upon David after he was anointed, much like the Spirit of God came upon Saul after he was anointed. But we do see that an evil spirit came upon Saul. So you kind of see this transition of the Spirit of God being with David, but it leaving Saul, and a dangerous or harmful spirit coming upon him. David became the harp player that would soothe these evil spirits away from Saul. And on Wednesday night, you got to study the wonderful story of David and Goliath. David taking on this great Philistine warrior, and David coming out victorious, not by his own means at all. But he said plainly, the battle belonged to the Lord. The Lord is the one that caused this to happen. And he was victorious because of the faith he put in God and God delivering him. You also read about how Saul's son, Jonathan, loved David. Much of what we study this morning will involve the relationship between Jonathan and David and the deep love and respect they had for each other. We've read that all of Israel loved David, and the women sang in the streets and proclaimed that Saul had slain his thousands, but David had slain his 10,000s. Saul, obviously, when he heard these things and he saw how they treated David and how they didn't treat him, I guess you could say, he was bitter. He was resentful. He was angry. He was jealous toward David. To the point where, when you left off Wednesday night, what's he trying to do? He's gotten to the point where he's going to try to kill him. Now, I haven't added up yet how many times does he attempt to kill David over these several chapters we're going to be studying, going from Wednesday into today and even this coming Wednesday. But it's an incredible amount of times that Saul is pursuing David aggressively, trying to kill him himself or trying to have others kill David. And the ones that you've read of so far is that he's thrown his spear at him twice, trying to pin him to the wall. He even tried to use his own daughters as a pawn in some way to try to get him to fall by the hand of the Philistines. And that didn't work. He was able to go and not just get 100 foreskins of the Philistines, but get 200, right? And so it hasn't worked. And it will continue not to work as we read through our text this morning. David's able to escape over and over again because the Lord is with David. And David trusts in the Lord. So the chapters we're studying this morning, I apologize if some of this got shifted a little bit, but we're going to be looking at chapter 19. Saul again tries to kill David. And David is going to seek refuge by going to someone he can trust, which is Samuel. And so he goes to Ramah to meet with Samuel. Also in chapter 20, Saul demonstrates that he's going to stop at nothing to try to kill David. And we're going to see him act in just incredibly wicked ways with great wrath and anger because he wants David killed. And that's it. That's it. He'll do anything to make that happen. We also read of the covenant vow that Jonathan and David made, and it's one of the greatest stories of friendship recorded in Scripture. And then in chapter 21, David flees to Nob, where he's going to meet the high priest Ahimelech, and also he's going to be fleeing to Gath. That's a really interesting point that happens here in chapter 21, that things get so bad that he goes to Gath. Where is Gath located? Philistia. It's in the land of the Philistines. David's going to go to the Philistines for refuge? He does. And that shows how bad it was, as far as how he would have to flee from Saul. I wanted to include this chart. I found this chart here in the last couple days. It's from some of the material that Larry and I have been looking at. But I wanted to show this to you. And if you'd like a copy of this, I'll print it off and bring it this afternoon. But it just shows the correlation between some of the texts we're looking at this morning. And if you want to look at what David was thinking and where his heart was, he recorded Psalms about it. Now, obviously, with the amount of time of us covering three chapters this morning, that's not going to be possible for us to read the Psalms and do a cross-connection between these texts. But it's amazing to think about, during these events, him reflecting on what was happening and where his faith and trust was. And in general, as you read these Psalms, you realize that David trusted in God, that God would deliver him over and over again from his enemies. David acknowledged God as being his stronghold and his shield. David praised God for being his refuge in the day of distress. And in some of the most stressful of situations, when his life is sincerely just a step away from being lost, he puts his faith in God, and he completely trusts in God. And you see that. And so I think this is a really great study if you would like to look at these passages. I try to put these Psalms as references in the slides. So hopefully that will help too as we go through our study this morning. So in 1 Samuel chapter 19, we're going to be discussing how Jonathan intercedes for David. Jonathan spoke to Saul, his father, and brought David and Saul back together again. Unfortunately, their reuniting was very short-lived. Because David's going to be driven out a second time. And although he brought them together, we see Saul again turning on David and trying to kill him. We're going to be reading of that. And then also we'll be reading of David fleeing to Samuel in Ramah. So let's begin with this first set of verses. This is verses 1 through 7. In chapter 19, we find Saul, a man who has now tried and failed repeatedly to kill David by pinning him to a wall, telling and commanding others to get involved. He hasn't been able to kill David himself, so who is he going to tell to go and kill David? Jonathan and all of his servants. Now, that's interesting because, obviously, would Jonathan have any intention whatsoever of killing David? No. David and Jonathan were knit together. Jonathan loved David as himself, as his own flesh. There was no way that Jonathan was going to try to kill David because he greatly delighted in him, as recorded in chapter 18. So Jonathan had even given David his robe, his armor, his sword, his bow, and his belt. So in verses 2 and 3, Jonathan told David that Saul was seeking his life and that David needed to be on guard. He needed to be prepared to hide himself in secret. Jonathan then said that he would go and speak to his father about David, and he would let David know what he learned. So this action again speaks of the great friendship between Jonathan and David. It speaks of the righteousness of Jonathan, of him trying to do the right thing in protecting David from the evil actions of his father. And so he's seeking to make intercession between these two parties. In verses 4 and 5, we read, "Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, 'Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial for you. For he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all of Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause?'" How did Saul react to this very true statement by Jonathan concerning David? What was it? He actually, at this point, he listened. He actually listened. It said, Saul listened to his voice, and he said, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." Great, right? That should have been the end of the story right there concerning this conflict. And so at this point in verse 7, you see Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him these words. Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was back in his presence as formerly. So he worked as an intercessor here between Jonathan and David. And Saul said, as the Lord lives, I will not put him to death. So unfortunately, this is just momentary reconciliation. This doesn't last long. As you continue, beginning in verse 8, we read of David going out to go fight with the Philistines again, and David defeats them with a great slaughter. The Philistines fled from before David. But then, here in this next part, what we read of is that there was an evil spirit of the Lord on Saul, in verse 9. An evil spirit of the Lord that came mightily upon him. Is this the first time we've heard that phrase used with Saul? No. In chapter 18, verse 10, we know that it states an evil spirit came upon Saul, and that he raved in his house, and that he threw a spear at David twice, trying to pin him to the wall. So here again, we read of this evil spirit or harmful spirit coming upon Saul, and he tries to kill David with his spear. Saul again took the spear from his hand. He tried to pin David to the wall, and David again is thankfully able to escape and to flee. We find in these next few verses and chapters that Saul's just not going to give up in pursuit of David. At this point, he has already employed multiple people to try to do it. He has now tried to kill him three times with a spear and has not been able to. So he had this unquenchable desire to kill David by any means necessary. In verse 11, Saul then decides, after trying to kill him, that he's going to send messengers to David's house in order to watch him, with the intention of putting him to death in the morning. So he's going to send messengers to David's house, and in the morning they're supposed to kill David. Now, Psalm 59, if you would like to read that, or make a little side note to read that later, that would be great. But it talks about this instance of Saul sending men to David's house to stalk him out and to try to kill him, and how David felt in that moment, and how he trusted and relied on the Lord. But David's wife, Saul's daughter Michal, warned David and said, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be put to death." So Michal let David escape out of a window, and he was able to flee. Verse 13 is very interesting. And the reason why it's very interesting is because we find here that Michal takes a household idol. She lays it on the bed. She covers it to look like David. And what's happening here is that she's trying to make it look like David is sick in bed in the house. So she takes a household idol, she takes some various things and some clothes, and makes it look like he's laying there. I will make the point that the King James Version and the English Standard Version describe Michal as taking an idol, but it doesn't specify it being a household idol. The New American Standard describes it as being a household idol. So some commentators at this point make some comments and say possibly that Michal was maybe not as of righteous a person as possible, as what you may assume because of this. But I will say there is a little bit of discrepancy between the translations as far as was it a household idol or an idol. But we do know what her purpose was. It was to what? To save David. I mean, that was the plot here, that she's trying to save David and give him more time as he escaped. So Michal then told them that David was sick, and Saul says in verse 15, "Bring him up to me on his bed, that I may put him to death." So at this point, the messengers go into David's house, they see this idol on the bed, and they see a quilt with goat's hair, and they realize, David's not here, we've been set up. And so in verse 17, Saul questioned his daughter Michal and said, "Why have you deceived me like this, and let my enemy go?" And Michal replied and said, "He said to me, 'Let me go. Why should I put you to death?'" So Michal has obviously also sided with David in protecting him, just like Jonathan has. So at this point, Saul has tried to kill David repeatedly himself. Saul has also used his daughters as a snare, trying to get the Philistines to kill David in battle. We also know that Jonathan has been sent, or he told Jonathan to go with his servants to go try and kill him, and Jonathan wouldn't do it. And now he's tried to kill David in his own home. These attempts have all failed. Is Saul going to give up? No. We read on. Right. There's more. He's so persistent. He will not let it go. And it even gets worse. All right. Do we have any comments so far? That's right. That's right. Jonathan is the rightful heir, and it makes no logical sense to Saul whatsoever. Why would Jonathan be behaving this way and giving up his, you know, he's the next king. But Saul is not at all applying the things that happened with Samuel. Samuel was very blunt about the kingdom's being taken away from you. And Saul just seems to be forgetting that completely. Yeah. Yes. Verse 9. Great point. An evil spirit of the Lord. That is a great question. Some translations lean more toward it being a troubling spirit. Or, who has a different translation on verse 9? Does anyone have anything that says something different than evil? When I looked up various translations, most do say evil, but some lean more toward a troubling spirit. Distressing spirit. What translation is that? New King James. Obviously, can the Lord send an evil spirit on someone as far as, does the Lord have anything evil within himself? No. What I think you see here, and I think this is the point, when the Spirit came mightily upon David, when he was anointed, and the evil spirit, the troubling spirit came upon Saul, who was the one that could soothe the troubling spirit? David, when he played the harp. What Saul has done is he has removed the solution. He's no longer the harp playing of David and David's presence. He has removed that. David is the thing that soothes his troubled spirit. And so this is not, I think, a situation of, well, he's just being carried and he's doing these things by the will of God to try to kill David. He has removed the solution of David. And I think that's the point, is because of that, those verses that talk about when he played the harp, it soothed the evil spirit away. Uh-huh.
I think the story of Job is great insight in statements like this. You know, it says it's from the Lord. You know, the Lord cannot be tempted with evil. He neither does he tempt anyone. But what he does allow, he protects us. But he also will allow Satan is out to destroy everyone. And the only reason we're not destroyed by Satan is because of God's protection. So God's obviously lifted an element of protection from Saul here for God's own purposes to display the character of Saul when he is tested like this. Even though he's tested,
that's right. And I would say it's very similar to... Right. And I would say it's very similar to the book of Judges. When the Spirit of God came upon Judges mightily, like with Samson, did that mean that everything Samson did was righteous? No. And here, the evil spirit comes upon Saul. Does that mean everything that Saul is doing is just, he's just being carried around like a pawn by God and make it being made? No. Saul had choice here. And I think it's that he removed the solution. He removed the thing that soothed him, the thing that he should have embraced in David. His envy and jealousy and wrath just overwhelmed him. He allowed that to happen. Uh-huh. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And it gets more devastating. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right. That's right. Does that help at all? Yeah, because that's right. That's not an easy passage. That's right. Hiding in the luggage, yeah.
And now he becomes completely self-absorbed, focused on himself. Mm-hmm. He's not considering God's will, just like Cain said, things have been taken from you. He didn't say, well, God's will be done.
Mm-hmm. No.
He just rejected that. I want to do it my way.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
We do the same thing. We're not careful. We get more focused on ourselves and the carnal part of us rather than glorifying God. We set ourselves up for failure.
That's right. Excellent comments. So in verses 18 through 24, we read, David flees his house and he travels to Samuel, who's in Ramah. Obviously, there are very few people that David could trust at this point. There's very few places where he felt like he could go, where he could seek refuge. And I think that list even dwindles more over the next several chapters. But David communicated to Samuel all that Saul had done, and Samuel and David traveled to Naoth, which was still in the area of Ramah. Saul soon found out that David's location was there at Naoth, and so he sends out messengers. Again, to try to go and kill David. In verse 20, we read of a very unique situation here. In verse 20, what we read is that when the messengers arrived, they saw the company of prophets prophesying, with Samuel standing and presiding over them, and the Spirit of God came upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. So when these messengers that Saul sent arrive, they begin to prophesy before Samuel. What caused the prophesying? The Spirit of God. That's right. The Spirit of God. It ties in really well with 2 Peter 1:21 that states, no prophecy was ever made by act of human will, but men were moved by the Holy Spirit and they spoke from God. So when Saul learned about these messengers prophesying and not carrying out his will to do what he asked them to do, what does he do? Send more messengers. They begin to prophesy, not doing what he asked them to do. They're not trying to kill David. Third time. Let's try it again. Send more messengers. They're prophesying again. So at this point, the point that I think needs to be made is that the aggressive intent of Saul was humbled three times by the Lord. You're trying to kill David. You're sending messengers three times. They get there. They begin to prophesy and praise God. You think Saul would get the message. It's not working. So Saul says, no, no, no. I'll go myself. Saul goes, and when he gets there, he arrives at a large well. It's in a place called Seku. And he says, where is Samuel and David? And they say, well, they're in Ramah. And so he goes there. What happens to Saul when he arrived in Naoth? Saul himself, just like his messengers, begins to prophesy. Right here, if you look at verse 23, he proceeded from there to Naoth in Ramah, and the Spirit of God came upon him also. So that when he went along prophesying continually until he came to Naoth in Ramah, he also stripped off his clothes. And he too prophesied before Samuel and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore, they say, is Saul also among the prophets? So the same Spirit of God that came upon the messengers three times now came upon Saul. The Spirit of God worked to change his hostility and his anger into prophetic praise to the Lord. You could think about him even like laying there naked, but you think about the context of just as the kingdom was going to be stripped from him, his clothes were stripped from him. There is an interesting kind of connection there. So in this instance, it reminds us a great deal of chapter 10 when the Spirit of God came upon Samuel after he was anointed. And remember how he began to prophesy with the prophets after he was anointed. This proverb that we read right here, is Saul also among the prophet, was stated back in chapter 10. So there's a great deal of connection there between chapter 10 and also what happens right here. But it just shows again, he's trying over and over and over and over to do what he wants to do. And God is showing his power over the situation. And the messengers are unable to carry out what they want. Saul is unable to carry out what he desires in trying to kill David here. Here's a map that shows this area. These areas are fairly, really close together here, but you see Gibeah. That's the area where Saul was. That's where David would have been in the presence of Saul. And then Ramah being just a little bit farther north. That's where he fled to meet with Samuel. I do want to go on and point out, this is an area that will come up soon, but Gath over here in Philistia. And you can see some of these other numbered areas. But David is on the run over these next several chapters, and he'll cover much of the ground that we actually have on this map as he tries to flee from Saul. All right, let's look at chapter 20. As we move into chapter 20, much of this chapter focuses on David still being on the run, but a lot of the chapter deals with the relationship between Jonathan and David. Jonathan and David's loyalty and love for each other is shown throughout. Also, we see Saul's anger just boiling over in chapter 20, that Saul definitely shows that he desires to kill David at all costs. And then also in chapter 20, we get a little bit more insight between the vow between Jonathan and David, the covenant between them, the agreement that they make before the Lord, and what that encompasses. And this is not the first time that they've made a covenant or a vow with each other. In chapter 18, verse 3, Jonathan and David made a vow to each other, but this chapter is a little bit more detailed about what that vow encompassed. All right, so let's look at the first several verses here of chapter 20. In chapter 20, in the first 11 verses here, David left Samuel in Naoth in Ramah to travel to Jonathan. So here we have recorded a very specific situation or conversation that happened between these very dear friends, Jonathan and David. In verse 1, David said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity? What is my sin that I've committed against your father that he's trying to kill me?" And these are very honest questions. David is asking, "What have I done? Why is he trying to kill me?" And the answer is, has David done anything? No, David has acted righteously. David has done everything he can to try to prove his loyalty to Saul in every way, shape, and form. And so David was at a loss concerning what he had done to bring this about. Jonathan assured David that he would not die. Jonathan said that his father would let him know anything that he was planning. He was sure of it, that if Saul was still pursuing his life, he would know about it. David knew that Saul was very aware of the deep friendship between himself and Jonathan, so David was not as certain that his father, that Saul would not keep something hidden from Jonathan. So David told Jonathan in verse 3, and this is very true, "But truly as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is hardly a step between me and death." As you read these chapters, is that true? Yes. And you think about here in a few chapters when he is in the cave and Saul is pursuing him. I mean, it is just a moment's notice. It is within seconds of him losing his life on multiple occasions, and even up to this point. You think about the spear being thrown at him and such. So David had narrowly escaped death, and he was definitely on a run from Saul's wrath here. Jonathan said that he would do anything for David, and so David devises a plan with Jonathan. And the plan is that the following day was the new moon feast. The new moon feast is a feast that was appointed by the Lord, authorized by the Lord in Numbers chapter 10. It was an important feast for the Israelites. Every male member was expected to observe the beginning of the new month. So this is a feast that David is supposed to be at, and he's supposed to be there next to Saul. At the feast, he was to sit down next to the king to eat. But instead, what David was going to do is he decided, "I'm not going to go to the feast. I'm going to go hide in the field. And then if Saul sees my seat empty, and if he asks about my whereabouts, Jonathan is going to say, well, he went back home to Bethlehem. And there's a yearly sacrifice that the whole family's doing. And so he asked for permission to go back home to Bethlehem, and I said he could go." At that point, if Saul says, "Well, that's okay, that's fine, that's good," what would happen is Jonathan would know that David's life was not in danger. But if he acts wrathfully and acts with anger, he would know that David's life obviously was still very much in danger. So David asked Jonathan to deal kindly with him, and he reminded them of the covenant that they made before the Lord, recorded in chapter 18, verse 3. This covenant was an oath between David and Jonathan that was before the Lord. At a moment when David struggled to find people he could trust, he knew he could trust Jonathan. And Jonathan wants to assure him fully in chapter 20 that he is on David's side, that when the rubber meets the road and when things get really difficult, Jonathan is going to stick with David. And David needed that assurance, and Jonathan gives it. So Jonathan assures him again, if he learns of any evil plot, he's going to tell David. They're making this plan between the two of them. And David's foresaw, by the way, if you look there at the end of the last two verses, in verse 10, then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" Do you think David knew that it was very likely that Saul would answer harshly? Yes. He knew that was likely. But after this, Jonathan told David to go out into the field with him, and they go out to the field together. Beginning in verse 12, Jonathan again affirmed his commitment to David. He said, "The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness." He makes a vow before the Lord and before David that he would let David know if there was a good feeling or if Saul intended to harm him. Jonathan made it clear that if David was not safe, he would let him know so that he could flee to safety. So Jonathan vowed that if he did not do this, Jonathan himself would suffer. He said, "If I don't do this myself, you can bring it upon me and hold it upon my own head." In verses 14 through 17, Jonathan's covenant vow is repeated, and it's in more detail. Let's read verses 14 through 17. Jonathan said, "If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies." Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. Jonathan truly loved David as his own life, and the vow clearly demonstrates the responsibility he put on himself. He again was going to try to intervene and reconcile his father and David. A really key verse here is verse 16. It's interesting that Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David. What does that mean that Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David? David's descendants. This is a long-term commitment that goes beyond even their own lifetime. And we see that played out later, don't we? We think about Mishbosheth, Jonathan's son. And so we're going to read about that in chapter 9 of 2 Samuel. He deals with sincere kindness David does to Mishbosheth. And then also he spares Jonathan's son's life, Mishbosheth, in 2 Samuel 21. So this is a long-term vow, long-term commitment before the Lord that they are going to be knit together for generations. That's the plan, and that's the commitment they make. How would Jonathan let David know Saul's intentions? What's the plan as far as how's he going to know if things go well or they don't go well? Shoot arrows, that's right. That's right. That's right. So, yeah, they go out into the field. Jonathan's going to shoot arrows, right? And there's going to be a lad out there. And he says, if he shoots short and he says it's on this side of you, it means you're safe. If the arrow goes beyond, it means the Lord has sent you away. And it's interesting that he says in verse 23, Jonathan says, "The Lord," not verse 23, excuse me. "The Lord has sent you away." What verse am I looking for here? It's there. 22, yes, there it is. "But if I say to you, behold, the arrows are beyond you, for the Lord has sent you away." And so that is the plan. And so this will be said verbally to the lad, and they'll be communicating in secret. And David will be out in the field and hear this, and he'll be able to do what he needs to do. Okay? In verses 24 through 29, David went into the field as planned. He didn't attend this feast of the new moon, and Saul noticed that his seat was empty. And he didn't say anything the first day, but we're told what Saul thought. What did Saul think was wrong with David when he missed the first day of the feast? He's unclean. He must be unclean. Right. In verse 26, he says, "It's an accident. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean." So that must be the reason why he's not there. So Saul lets it go the first day. The second day, they gather again for the feast, and again, David's seat is empty. And at this point, he begins to question Jonathan about his whereabouts. If you look at verses 27 through 29, Saul said, "Why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal, either yesterday or today?" And Jonathan then answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem, for he said, 'Please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to attend. And now if I have found favor in your sight, please let me get away that I may see my brothers. For this reason he has not come to the king's table.'" How would Saul react to this statement? Angry. Yeah, great anger. And so here, Saul responds with great anger toward Jonathan. Saul's desire to kill David brings him here to even a greater low. He had already accused his daughter Michal of being against him, and now he insults Jonathan, even insults his own wife. If you look at verses 30 and 31, then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore now, send and bring him to me, for he must surely die." This statement reminds us of how Saul was told by Samuel plainly that he was going to be rejected from being king. When he didn't utterly destroy Amalek, Samuel made it clear that the kingdom was going to be torn from him, just as he had torn Samuel's robe and given to a man after God's own heart. But Saul here, again, just shows he was stubborn, he's wrathful, he's in denial of the will of the Lord. And he firmly believes that David has to be killed in order to set up Jonathan's kingdom, a kingdom that will never happen. By contrast, Jonathan answered his father and he said, "Why? Why should David be put to death? What has he done?" At this point, Saul reaches a new low. He attempts to kill Jonathan. He throws his spear at his own son, trying to strike him down. Saul's downward spiral had now come to a place where his envy and jealousy for David had just boiled over into doing unthinkable things. And this, again, is not the first time. It's not the last time. Unfortunately. But I do want to make a point here that, you know, Jonathan knew that Saul would stop now at nothing to kill David. If his own father is trying to kill him, I need to go tell David to leave. Would you all agree? I read a commentary a couple nights ago, and I think I laughed out loud when I read it. But in this passage, it actually said, "Why did Jonathan become so angry?" And I laughed, and I was like, "Courtney, do you know what this question just said? Why do you think Jonathan became so angry? How would you feel if your dad just tried to kill you? How would you feel if you're acting righteously and your father is incredibly acting crazy and wicked and just everything, unreasonable, stubborn?" I mean, I just couldn't even, like, that's just incredible to even ask that question. But he said, Jonathan leaves. He leaves furious. He's in fierce anger. He doesn't go back to the festival. He's grieved over David because his father had dishonored him. And for good reason. Here at the end of these next few verses, 35 through 42, after Jonathan left the feast in fierce anger, he carries out his vow to David. He went into the field with the young lad. He shot the arrow past him as he said he would do, which communicated he needed to leave. It was time to depart. And then the lad goes and gathers this arrow. Jonathan commands the lad to go into the city and to leave. And so at this point, David rises up where Jonathan could see him, and David falls on his face to the ground and he bows three times. David was overcome with emotion. He knew things didn't go well. He knew that his life was seriously in danger. He was not going to be restored back to the position he wanted to be in. And he was going to have to run for his life. And so Jonathan and David, again, demonstrate their deep friendship here. They weep together in the field. Jonathan loved David as himself. They kissed each other. They wept. You know, later, David would describe Jonathan's love as being more wonderful than the love of a woman. And the love between them was not sinful, it wasn't fleshly, it wasn't wicked in any way, shape, or form. It was just sincere, deep-rooted loyalty to each other. And it was even greater than the love that he could find with all the wives David later had. That kind of loyalty and that kind of trust is something that he found in Jonathan that he couldn't even find in a woman. So in verse 42, we read, "Jonathan said to him, 'Go in safety, inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, The Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever.' Then he rose and departed, while Jonathan went into the city." And so David is going to be on the run now, and these two friends are separated. And David has to flee for his life from place to place. All right? Do we have any comments before we wrap up there? Yes. His kingdom. That's right.
Think about that. You know, the life of his
Yes. And I think it shows Jonathan's trust in the Lord and the trust in David. I mean, it's just, it's the friendship, but it's also the Lord's will. That's right. He's an incredible individual. Yes. If you would, look at chapters 21, 22, 23, and 24. We'll have to look at about, hopefully, four chapters on Wednesday, but there's some very interesting things that happen over the next several chapters that tie into what we studied this morning. Thank you all very much.